It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, the Ticket's Gam and Tam. Here's Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
This win, all the way through, and this time Gonzalez is heroic rather than rash. Robinson! Acrobatic and extremely well-timed. Second international goal for Anthony Robinson, both in World Cup qualifiers, and the breakthrough for the U.S.
Hi-da-ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around Saturdays, somewhere around 2 o'clock all the way to 4, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. Don't forget you can find us on our website, thekickaround.com. Hi, for those new here or unfamiliar, I'm Peter, and also in this studio, noted soccer expert, Canadian, rival, Canuck, poutine eater, Andy Swift.
Wee wee. Hey, Peter.
You need to go wee wee?
You excited about tomorrow?
Yes.
And ecstatic about your national team results?
Are you?
Yes.
Tomorrow. So, tomorrow is U.S.-Canada. Both teams coming off three-point wins. And just about an hour ago, FIFA released the official match poster.
I thought you were going to say they released the weather for tomorrow, but
well,
no,
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
And if you haven't seen the official match poster, I believe it's just called Cliché.
Key being FIFA's version of U.S. Canada, right?
Yes, it has very angry looking Alphonso Davies and Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie and some other Canadian player I don't know the name of off the top of my head. But in the background, there's a moose.
Very Canadian.
There's an eagle.
Very American.
For some really weird reason, there's the Las Vegas sign.
Yes, the 100-degree weather Las Vegas sign when they're going to play. Like
minus two.
Yeah.
And I think also, of course, you can't forget the good old Statue of Liberty. So
nice.
That is tomorrow on Paramount Plus,
Mountie,
2 p.m., Canada versus U.S. We have so much to talk about today. We're getting a couple of bonus segments that we're going to plow through. So it's going to go something like this. We're going to dive into all of the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying with probably the best person I can think of other than Andy, which would be the CONCACAFinator himself, John Arnold.
The expert, our regional expert.
Yes, because we've got all this time, and we haven't done a lot of soccer talking on the radio of late. We're bringing out all our friends. Lars Siverston's going to join us to catch us up on all things Premier League. There's lots going on there. Maybe he can help Sam out with the Frank Lampard to Everton story.
Man, things going back to worse there.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that. Andy, what in the actual F is going on in Frisco at FC Dallas?
Good things, my friend. Good things.
Yes. So we're going to...
You seem shocked and...
Yes.
Surprised.
Yeah, 27 years. Yes, I am shocked and surprised. We're going to pull Buzz Carrick out of mothballs and ask him some questions about that. Tyler Kern is going to join us to talk Bundesliga.
Got lots of peppy Bundesliga questions for him.
We do have many, many things to talk about. So tomorrow is U.S.-Canada, but we did go through the first window of games the other day. Just real briefly, Andy, did you watch both the U.S. game and the Canada game?
I did. I had the U.S. game on television, the Canada game on my trusty computer, and the Chile game by radio on my iPad, and trying to like follow everything at once because they all started within 15 minutes of each other. It was crazy.
I have already received multiple complaints that tomorrow's game collides yeah. with the AFC Championship,
right?
NFL,
yes, the American Football
very
League
popular sporting right. event that'll yeah. be taking place.
The American Football Championship being played at 2, and the Canadian Federation didn't really seem to care.
Okay, I think this is the thing because everybody wants to blame it on CONCACAF.
Yeah, they're even less them, right? I mean,
it was the Canadians that chose to play this game.
Of course, yeah. The home team chooses venue and time.
And it's in Hamilton.
Correct.
Okay, for those of us unfamiliar with Canadian geography, where is Hamilton?
About an hour's drive southwest of Toronto.
And the weather report for tomorrow is?
Cold, but not as cold, and probably because it'll be played in the afternoon, not as cold as it'll be in Minneapolis on Wednesday, or St. Paul, I guess, on Wednesday for the U.S.-Honduras game. That one is going to be cold. I think it's going to be like 20, 22 degrees tomorrow for the U.S.-Canada game.
But the the Honduras game in Minneapolis.
In St. Paul.
In St. Paul, Minnesota.
I'm looking at the hourly.
It's supposed to be like 8.
The hourly, yeah, you've looked, right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not good.
No, that's very cold. That's dangerously cold. Right?
When I don't know why they chose to do this. I'm sure they thought they were being super clever and really putting it to the Hondurans, but I'm very concerned that they are going to. This is going to blow up in their face, and I don't think I'm unique in that.
Well,
opinion.
I did watch.
I am worried about that.
I got to see Honduras play a little bit when they played Canada, obviously, the other day, Thursday.
That was in Honduras, right?
Yeah. Not very good.
By the way, when was the last time Canada won a Central American World Cup qualifier? It's been a long time.
A qualifier played in Central America? Yeah, 85, I think.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Like right before they qualified for the 86 World Cup.
All right. Well, we got a lot more to talk about, specifically about the U.S. 1-0 win over El Salvador, why probably you shouldn't be freaking out like many people probably are. We've got good reason for that. As I said, we'll get John Arnold in on the conversation. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll also catch you up on some other things here next on The Kick Around.
Speaking of goats.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that, Andy.
What a segue.
Coming up next, the great John Arnold, the Concacafinator himself, will join us to talk all things U.S. men's national team, the big game tomorrow, the rest of the World Cup qualifiers. We're in a big trio of games over the next few days, and we'll get into all of that.
You're not the goat I was alluding to.
You really didn't need to clarify that. I think we all got that. Yes. Unfortunately for Andy and Peter and the soccer show, Tom Brady's decided to announce his retirement. So, you know, there's a very, very good shot that Jeff Catlin will call and say, hey, Jake and Bob are going to come on and talk Brady for the next 2 hours, but we'll just see how that goes.
Hey, you know Tom Brady's connection to FC Dallas and soccer?
No.
So he's just, well, other than he plays in the NFL and he's the greatest player in NFL history and the owners of FC
Dallas.
This
better be good.
Giselle is from Porto Alegre, and her team is Grêmio. Her all-time childhood favorite team in soccer is Grêmio, and Grêmio is where our technical director at FC Dallas came from.
Boy, you really pulled that one out of your butt. Yeah. Sure.
I thought it was a good connection.
Okay.
Grêmio, Giselle, Tom Brady.
Okay. Is that all you got?
That's all I have.
Okay. Now, coming up after later in the next hour, this hour, whatever it is, Lars Siverston is going to join us. We are going to talk Premier League. We are in an international window, so there are no Premier League games this weekend, and not for a bit. Things have settled. Is there anything in particular you're very antsy to talk with Lars about?
Well, I want to get his take on who he thinks will finish in that fourth spot. But also, does Liverpool have a chance? Because when I did the math, you laughed at me. You're like, I think they have a chance to catch City. And I'm going to ask him. Liverpool was playing like doo-doo. Okay.
So here's the thing that I wanted to... We don't have to waste his time with this, but it dawned on me the other day that if we are lucky... Have you looked at the championship table of late?
Yeah.
The second division championship table.
As of last week, I did, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dude, if things go the way that I feel like they may go here soon, we may get lucky and end up with a Premier League 20-team Premier League league that ends up reflecting what it looked like back when we first started getting regular TV access to the league. So think about the mid to late 90s on Fox Soccer Channel. So many of the teams that used to be in the Premier League and haven't in a while or have been on or off may all now think of Fulham.
Yeah, Fulham's been in and out.
Okay.
But it's more this one.
Middlesbrough.
Okay, they were in recently. It's Blackburn that you're referring to.
Blackburn?
Right? Yeah, Blackburn,
yes.
And QPR.
Yes.
Those are the two that we haven't seen. QPR has been gone now for maybe 8 years. And Blackburn, it's been forever. And they were a staple in the Premier League, or First Division, even before they were. It was called Premier League. So it would be exciting to see one of those two come up. The Cherries are the other one, Bournemouth, but
yeah.
We've seen them recently.
I mean, there's a really good chance we could get Fulham, Blackburn, and QPR.
Yeah, that would be cool. The one I really was hoping, and they've tailed off, is Nottingham Forest. Because
yeah.
They were a staple from the past, a very successful team, one we, as kids, if you followed the English league, know all about. And they haven't played in the first division in a long time. It'd be fun to see them, but they've tailed off a little bit.
Are you aware of the exploits of the Cottagers, Fulham? Have you heard about the fact how many goals? They have scored 74 goals.
Yeah, what's going on there? Because this is very unlike them.
They are on a tear.
Yeah.
They're playing amazingly well.
Okay.
They're just kind of mowing through everybody.
Is it the roster they've put together? Or, you know,
well, Mitrovic has found his
course,
form,
yeah,
and
okay,
he's very,
yes.
You know, he's not he's kind of a guy that once he figures it out, he goes for a while.
But last time they were in the championship, he was also scoring a lot of goals, right?
And the coach, the guy, I think he used to be at Watford, Silva? Wasn't that where he was? Or was he at Everton?
Well, he was also at he was at Watford. He's one of the many, many, many to get fired at Watford.
Well, he's taken over and he's done an amazing job. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out.
He was at Everton too, right?
I thought so. Didn't he leave Watford for Everton,
Marco
Sam?
Silva?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was canned from Watford.
Here and then left.
Yeah. So just the idea that those teams will be back in and we'll have a Premier League table that has those teams in it will feel very retro to me. Because those were the teams that were playing in it. Like Blackburn with their two-panel shirts.
Mm-hmm.
I love that look.
Blackburn's not the team we talked about buying. No, that's Blackpool.
That was Blackpool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was Blackpool.
Okay.
QPR.
They're one of the classic, too. Classic teams.
So Lars Siverston will be joining us here shortly, and we'll talk about the race for fourth place. We'll try to help Sam out, as it appears that Frank Lampard has he taken the job at Everton?
It has been, like, agreed to, but there's no contract yet, so it could fall apart because that's how this has gone. But likely at this point.
Interested to get Lars' take on that because Lampard did not leave in a good way from Chelsea, as far as coaching, like I don't think
and
people
teams
were impressed.
Been falling over themselves to get access to him.
Nope.
No. In fact, it's you know, he hasn't been able to find a gig. So the other question is, what is Everton doing, Sam? We'll ask Lars.
Yeah. Do you and Dave Lane have an Everton Dallas, you know, group therapy thing going on at all?
No, we probably need to start one. I probably need to find any other Everton
support
fans
group.
And just cry on each other's shoulders.
Not you supporters and, group, support group.
Yes.
Yeah, because you and Davey are the two big Everton fans that I know of off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think we're the only two here at the ticket unless somebody's hiding a Toffees affiliation.
I think Corby's wife is a big Everton
yes,
fan,
he
too.
Mentioned that on the show, but I think he flipped Chelsea on our show.
He did the Corby thing.
They brought the whole family out when Everton got to the Dallas Cup Finals. Corby and the wife and the kids all came out. She's a huge Everton fan.
At least one of our teams wins.
At least one
Youth
of them.
Your team is
yeah.
good, yeah.
All right. So we'll do all of that. Like I said, Buzz Carrick from Third Degree is going to check in with us to talk about what in the world is going on with the team from Frisco. And Tyler Kern will talk some Bundesliga. And yes, we may even break out the dribbles. So we'll do all of that next here on The Kick Around. Now that the holidays are over, I recognize there's a possibility that you didn't get that jersey, hat, or sweatshirt, or whatever, from your favorite soccer club. But did you know? Thankfully, all of that's still available by the great people at soccer90.com. Additionally, while you could go shop for it on their fantastic website, you do know, don't you, there is an actual retail store. Yes, there's an actual Soccer 90 brick-and-mortar thing up in Frisco, Texas, at Toyota Stadium next to the Hall of Fame. They're open every day of the week other than Monday. It is a great place to walk in and see everything that you and I love. Soccer stuff galore. U.S. national team, MLS teams, international club teams from all over the world. They've got it. Chelsea, Man City, Bayern, Juventus, Manchester United, they got a little bit of stuff from every place. And if they don't have it, make sure you ask them because sometimes it's tough to get that stuff. Like if you're looking for a Ricardo Pepi Osberg jersey, well, you should know they're working on getting those. They also have other types of soccer gear like shin guards, gloves, etc. A little bit of everything for a little bit of all. Go to soccer90.com, the website, or go to the store in Frisco, Texas. And when you do check out, use the code KICKAROUND to get 25% off. Some exclusions apply. Soccer90.com, soccer Christmas 24/7. Every time one of these windows comes around, and I'm speaking about World Cup qualifying windows, I am instantly reminded why I have a tremendous love-hate relationship with these things, because it never ceases to stress me out to no end to watch the U.S. men's national team play.
Were you stressed watching them play El Salvador on Thursday?
I was very stressed.
But you are not, I mean, you're not in the, if it wasn't a pretty win, then I'm all mad. Because a win is a win, right?
Let's get
in CONCACAF and qualifying for World Cups, period. There's no style points.
No.
3 points or bust.
And you know what?
At home.
If you don't believe Andy and I, we're going to bring in, live from the Diamond Factory Ticket Hotline, the expert in all things CONCACAF. It is the CONCACAFinator himself, John Arnold. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Do you like my new nickname for you?
Look, I never turned down a CONCACAF-related pun. It's all my work for any stretch of time, though. So
well,
I love it.
It's not only a pun on CONCACAF, but it's also a pun on the title of your newsletter. I mean, I'm a professional, John. Don't doubt me. The other thing I'm going to ask you up front before we get into this too much, are we going to adhere to Anthony Robinson's request that we refer to him as Jedi, or are we just going to kind of let that pass?
You know, it's complicated as a journalist. You know, you want to respect your sources' wishes, but at the same time, your editor usually wants a first name, last name. You know, I've gotten some calls from the lovely folks at the Dallas Morning News print desk saying, This is a Brazilian guy? What's going on here? Yeah, it's a Brazilian guy. No, he doesn't have two names. That's what he's called. So, you know, we'll see if we can sneak Jedi into print, but I'm going to be getting calls. I'll tell you that.
Look, he scored 2 goals over the last few games for the U.S., and he scored a very important one on Thursday for this nation. If he wants to be called, is he really serious that he wants to be referred to as Jedi?
I always look at what the players themselves put on social media, and he has both names on there, Anthony and Jedi. So I don't know. If you're going to go all in, go all in. Get the other name off your Twitter profile. Get the other name off your Instagram, and I'll start calling you Jedi. But it's clear the force is with him. As you mentioned, he's kind of the one, despite being a defender, who's scoring these goals, who's making things happen. And look, like you said, Peter, it was nervous moments. Like, the U.S. needed that. So I can understand why, you know, fans might abide by the request, because this is the guy that U.S. fans are liking quite a bit right now.
Yeah. We all have to admit that the U.S. was a short and curly away from a Alex Roldan worldie early in the game that would have upset the apple cart greatly. But here's the thing that I'm turning to you for agreement on. We should all just be glad the U.S. got the 3 points and don't worry about style. Isn't that the right way to deal with these games?
Oh, absolutely, especially with this window where the U.S. has elected. This was their choice to play in two extremely cold weather climates. You knew it wasn't going to be a pretty game in Columbus. You know it's not going to be a pretty game Wednesday when they play Honduras in St. Paul, where the wind chill is going to be below zero Fahrenheit. So it's get 3 points and move on. I mean, if the U.S. didn't learn that lesson in the 2018 World Cup cycle win, as I have to remind us, the U.S. didn't qualify for the World Cup. I don't know that the lesson will ever stick. Fans, I get, you know, maybe they can have more expectations, but I think the players themselves, the coaches, and even the Federation officials know, hey, just get to the show, and then who knows what can happen, right? You got to start preparing for the World Cup when you're actually in the World Cup. But right now, you know, it's still all about getting points. So far, maximum points this window for the U.S., that's really all you can ask for.
So, taking into account that Costa Rica beat Panama on Thursday, that was a big help for the top three teams, because the fourth spot, Panama, is a little bit farther away from them now, points-wise. Independent of what happens against Canada tomorrow, a win against Honduras in St. Paul, I think we can all then pretty much say almost wraps it up, right?
Yeah, the U.S. should feel very good about where they are, and I think that's another thing about kind of being happy with 3 points from Thursday. You know, again, like, I don't mean to belabor the point. I know it was painful for U.S. fans, but this is a team that didn't qualify last cycle, didn't make the playoff. They didn't even make the playoff with the opportunity to go in. So if the U.S. can achieve one of these top three spots, but right now they're sitting in second place, they're on 18 points, they've only lost one game this entire cycle, that seems pretty good that they're going to be able to make it in. You know, something
catastrophic, yeah.
In a way, would have to happen for the U.S. to fall out of these top three places that secure an automatic place in Qatar, which is the whole goal of this whole song and dance. It's a tough cycle this time around. You know, the schedule has been condensed by the pandemic, and these matches are coming in these three-match intervals where there's only 2 days off. I was joking, guys, in the newsletter that I write about the CONCACAF region, that I barely have time to plan for content. And I'm not running around trying to do recovery, spending 90 minutes playing a soccer match and then figuring out what happens in 2 days. So if the newsletter writer is tired, I can't imagine how the players are feeling. But again, it's kind of survive in advance. And I think the U.S. has set themselves up well to do exactly that, to advance out of this group as one of the top three automatic qualifiers and start making plans for Qatar in November, December.
All right, Thursday's game for the U.S., if you just look at the stats, the XG and all the possession stats, the U.S. should have spanked El Salvador. And certainly, Jesus Ferreira should have finished an opportunity early in the game. And probably him starting over Pepe would have been the headline of everything until the game played itself out. And the thing that I'm really spending my most time wondering about is Christian Pulisic, who continues to kind of sputter, and clearly whatever is going on with him and Chelsea is now having a knock-on effect with his national team stuff. What are your opinions about what's going right and wrong with him at this point?
Yeah, I thought he put in a quite frankly disappointing performance against El Salvador. You know, this is the player that's supposed to be your shining star, supposed to be your best player, and really didn't do anything that dynamic. You know, the El Salvador defense was missing their two best center backs. It's already a defense that the U.S., you know, with all respect to El Salvador, should be carving up, and they really didn't, right? As you mentioned, there were some missed chances, but very few of those chances came from the boot of Christian Pulisic. And I do think it's fair to ask for more from this player that we saw, even in the 2018 cycle, as a very young player, you know, have a great performance against international teams, kind of raise the level of the U.S. Right now, the good news for the U.S. is there's other great players around him that are raising the team's level, but you want Christian Pulisic firing on all cylinders. Look, you got time, again, before Qatar, November, December. Maybe his club situation changes. Maybe he just starts to feel this boost. You know, we see players all over the world, certainly all over the CONCACAF region, who perform much better with their countries than they do with their clubs. I'm not saying you're rooting for that, if you're a U.S. fan, that you want Christian Pulisic to struggle sometimes and be good other times. But, I think it's fair for fans to want more from him and can rest easy in the fact that there are other players who are informed, who seem to raise their level when they're wearing the Stars and Stripes shirt. But this was one of the worst showings in recent memory for Christian Pulisic. So I think he's primed for a bounce back game against Canada. If he doesn't have a response this window, then I think it is concerning. And you start to think, hey, do we need to do something different here?
All right, we're talking to John Arnold, who is a well-noted soccer journalist specifically about CONCACAF.
John, true or false, North Texas's own Weston McKennie is currently the national team's most valuable asset?
True. I think when you look at the games that he's missed, they're the games that the U.S. has struggled in most. You know, the Nashville game and the defeat against Panama, right? And the suspension against Jamaica. These are the games that have been the most difficult for the U.S. And so the pride of Little Elm, Weston McKennie, I mean, he's a player who just kind of does it all. I think he's a weird one because, you know, soccer people like us look at him and we say, well, you know, he's deficient in this category, or he doesn't always make the right choice here. Maybe he lacks a little consistency in these areas, but he's the perfect player for an international game where it just seems like he gets the knife between his teeth and he does the right things and kind of, I don't know. I mean, these are wishy-washy terms in a way. You know, we're not saying that his shot is great. We're not saying his positioning is great. But it just seems like he does the right things, and he has those intangibles that are so critical. at a high level as well. It's not like he's only trying hard. He's doing things very well, and I think he's the most important player for the U.S., especially with Christian Pulisic not performing up to standard and with the U.S.'s search for a consistent number nine, a consistent forward still underway. I think McKinney gives the team a bit of a steal, a bit of a backbone that if they didn't have, you'd be more concerned about Pulisic not finding his form, about players not finishing their opportunities. But the fact that you have McKinney kind of doing it all, you know, playing some defending, you know, some attacking, helping the attack when he can, gives you, I think, that comfort where you say, if this guy's on the field and playing his best, we're going to be okay. For me, he's the most important U.S. player right now.
All right, so tomorrow, 2 p.m., U.S. is in Canada. They have a very short trip to go from Columbus, a relatively short trip, and that's part of the thinking about why the Federation put these three games where they are. Canada's having to return from Honduras, which is over a 2,000-mile trip. Is there any way the U.S. has some sort of advantage going into this game, which will be cold and also played on a Canadian field made of AstroTurf?
Yeah, I think Canada's done what you have to do in the CONCACAF region and tried to find that extra home field advantage, but they are making a long trip. I think that the U.S. has some things going for it. They're making a shorter trip, which is a bit strange. And also, I think, have a deeper roster. When you look at Canada, they're missing Alphonso Davies because of some concern about his heart after he had COVID, and missing a couple other players who are key. But John Herdman, the Canada manager, has sort of planned for that. Some players were held out of that Honduras game. Some players who, if they had received a yellow card, would have been suspended for this game. They played nice. They didn't get their names in the book. And they got the result in Honduras, which was huge. The first time Canada's won there since 1985. So I think there's a fair amount of momentum around the Canada team. Does the U.S. have any sort of edge? Maybe just in the kind of history, the hegemony that the U.S. has had in this rivalry. You have to go back to 1980 for the last time Canada beat the United States in a World Cup qualification match. So, you know, it's been the Americans who have been better on the field in recent history. Canada's obviously quite different from these past cycles. They're the number one team in the CONCACAF table right now. So, you know, it's going to be a very difficult game. Canada's doing everything they can to get that intangibles edge, to get in the U.S.'s head, to have some sort of home field advantage. But at the same time, it's not going to be the most difficult venue that the U.S. plays in during World Cup qualification, half capacity because of COVID regulations in Canada. The U.S., I think, should keep their head. I think that Greg Berhalter needs to stress the message that, you know, hey, this is a different Canada team than we've seen in the past, but at the same time, we don't really lose to these guys. There's one loss in the Nations League a couple years ago, but for the most part, we're the favorites here. We're the top dogs. I think the U.S. needs some swagger going into it, and if they have that attitude, which it definitely feels like they have, I think they can go toe-to-toe with Canada. Why not?
Yeah, you know, the thing about Canada is it just feels like they have come on hot out of nowhere, but I've been a long believer that part of what has helped Canada get to the point where they are today and are playing as well as they are today is they have this weird advantage of being asked to play a bunch of qualifier games that the U.S. and Mexico got to bypass, and so they've had all of this extra game time of legitimate games of importance to gel and find chemistry and also include a bunch of a lot of talent that maybe most Americans are unfamiliar with.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about going through adversity, you know, they had to play away to Haiti. Well, if you've been following what's happening politically in Haiti, it's not a picnic to go play there, right?
They played
other strange games during that extra World Cup qualification round, two rounds actually, that they had to go through that the other teams didn't. So I think that's a great point that they've been able to gel. One thing that disrupted them a bit is because of those COVID regulations that Canada has put in as a government, they weren't able to have a camp that they were hoping to have to keep that chemistry going this month. They had to cancel a trip down to Florida that they were going to, you know, get some guys together, play some practice matches, and kind of get things going. So I think that you do see a Canada that maybe comes in less sharp than any of the previous windows. Obviously, it didn't show against Honduras. We can get into how difficult they've had a time, how bad they've been, to be frank, in this World Cup qualification cycle. But I think that that's a great point that Canada has gelled. They have come together, and their core is extremely talented. Their players are fantastic, and John Herdman's done a great job putting it together. So I think, you know, ultimately, it's kind of weird to be talking about Canada like this, but this is a 1-2 game in World Cup qualification. Mexico kind of on the outside looking in right now, and it reflects itself. I hope it's another great chapter of a kind of fledgling rivalry, because Canada hasn't been relevant in world soccer for a long time. And I think they've put themselves on the map and should be in Qatar as well. Ultimately, both these teams should make it through, but I hope we see a fun match and one that's, that reflects both teams' strengths, you know, that actually is a nice game of soccer. Fingers crossed.
Hey, John, real quick as we wrap up the segment, speaking of regulations, COVID regulations, Timothy Weah, can you confirm he will not be able to travel and play in this game because he's not double vaccinated? Is that correct?
That's what Greg Berhalter said. He said he got one shot and got COVID during the process of getting a second shot in France, the country that he plays his domestic game in, considers them fully vaccinated, but Canada doesn't. It is not great to have a player missing, but at the same time, I think the U.S. does have players to cover his absence. You know, you look at guys like Brendan Aaronson, Paul Arriola, the new FC Dallas player. You know, there are players there that the U.S. can put in. You'd like to have a full-strength squad, but one won't be able to cross the border, it seems like.
All right, John, you got a prediction for tomorrow, 2 p.m., Paramount Plus, U.S.-Canada?
It seems wishy-washy, but I'm going for a draw, and actually I was looking at the odds for another project that I do, where the draw is actually the most lucrative. So, from Las Vegas, but, you know, it could be. I think the teams are evenly matched. I think there's a lot at stake. I think both managers, while they wouldn't admit it, have been kind of looking forward to this game, even though they both had games on Thursday, because it is a big one. It is a developing rivalry. I think they come out even. Both teams probably find one goal, and we go home. Or we go into the third game, rather, with both teams taking a point.
It'll be colder in St. Paul than Hamilton, by the way.
Yeah, a lot colder.
Indeed.
Hey, John, I would like to give you an opportunity to promote your excellent newsletter that I recommend everybody subscribe to.
Yeah, it's called Getting CONCACAF. You can Google it or Google my name, and it'll pop up. The URL, like everything in CONCACAF, I like to say, it's just a little bit too complicated. So just Google Getting CONCACAF. It should pop up. And at least once a week I write about the region, what's going on in English, sometimes Latin American countries, sometimes Caribbean countries. It's difficult to find that news. So I give you some news and analysis around the region, and also features talking to players, talking to federation presidents, talking to everyone involved. If you want to nerd out on this stuff, it's a safe space to do that. So check out Getting CONCACAF. You can go premium, $50 a year, or just enjoy the free version, but would love to have you guys over there.
Awesome. Thanks, John. It's great to talk to you again. John Arnold, our good friend. Enjoy the rest of the qualifiers.
So much info.
I do recommend you subscribing to his newsletter. John's story about how he got into this kind of niche of covering this part of the football world is really both fascinating and admirable. He's really done a ton of work to educate himself. He's taught himself Spanish. He went and lived in Mexico for a while. Really, really cool dude, and I can't recommend his newsletter more highly. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears, dial up London, get on the phone with Lars, and talk Premier League next on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around Saturdays, you know, whenever they tell us to broadcast, but we're going to a little past 4 o'clock today. Hi, I'm Peter. He's Andy. Thanks again to John Arnold for helping us discuss CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. We will talk more U.S. men's national team before the end of the show. But now we must turn our focus to the thing that we know and love and dearest to our hearts, which is the Premier League. So we fire up the internet. And live from London, it is our good friend, Lars Siverston. Cheerio, Lars.
Good afternoon, everyone.
How are you?
How have you been?
Man, we haven't talked to you in what feels like, have we even talked to you this year?
No, I don't think so. And I had to cancel an appointment we had in December because I fell very ill.
You did.
I had what I referred to as fake COVID. Like, I had all the symptoms. It just wasn't
You had
COVID.
The actual flu?
Very strange.
The real flu?
Well, probably that's what we call it. I don't know. I was in bed for like 2 weeks and couldn't talk. It was very strange.
Yeah. Oh, poor. We just, that whole idea of a visual of sick, sickly, bedridden Lars just brings no joy to my heart, my friend. I'm glad you're feeling better.
But I had a little dance every time I tested negative for COVID, because of course that could escalate into something considerably worse, and I kept testing negative, so that was good. Anyway, we've missed many things. I have an inkling that you might. I mean, I don't know where. I struggle to speak briefly at the best of times. I think today's going to be very difficult.
No. Well, we've set aside two segments for you, Lars, so we'll figure out a way to wedge in all the good stuff. I think we've all come to an agreement, although Andy wants to make his case that I'm wrong about this, but City's won the Premier League, right?
I mean, close enough. I wouldn't take bets on anything else happening.
Lars, look. Okay. This is how I look at it.
Hear me out. What are you?
One game in hand makes up 3 points. The head-to-head matchup makes up 3 more points. That's 6. So that would get Liverpool to 54 versus City's 57. Then it's just a 3-point gap. Right?
But City are
a lot closer.
Better at the moment. I just think City are a better team.
That's a technicality.
It's a very unfortunate technicality.
All right. Well.
No, listen. I'm not going to... Listen, stranger things have and continue to happen. Put it that way. But I wouldn't hold my breath.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a few things to choose from. You tell me which one you want to talk about first. The race for fourth, Frank Lampard becoming the new manager at Everton, or would you like to talk about Brentford signing Christian Eriksen to a contract?
Listen, let's just start with Everton, because I mean we're gonna need some time on this.
Sam Hale has just put his head in his hands.
Our producer is an Everton.
I think Everton might have seen sort of Tottenham's spectacularly farcical managerial hunt this summer and thought, you know, hold my beer, you know, let's see what we can do here. It hasn't been as protracted and long as Tottenham's was, but it has been very strange. Everton's managerial hunt has included reports in Italy, unconfirmed reports, but reports in Italy that they had a sniff at Jose Mourinho. Which is an incredible move. That might have been the funniest of all timelines, I have to say. But there was an inquiry with Roberto Martinez, the Belgium manager, which apparently fell through because the Belgian FA wasn't keen on letting him job share or doing both, and he didn't want to step down ahead of the World Cup, so that didn't go anywhere.
Makes sense.
And then they were reportedly very close to appointing this Portuguese gentleman named Vitor Pereira, who's been linked to the Everton job 2 times earlier, in spite of not really having a CV and a hinterland in his career that suggests he should be anywhere near the Everton job, but he is represented by an agent by an agent named Kia Urabshan, who is reportedly quite close with the Everton owner. You know, it's funny how these things go. And he was very close and almost on the verge of getting the job when there was sort of really aggressive backlash in the fan base against this guy who's... he did win the league twice with Porto, but then he sort of had a bad time at Olympiacos. Well, he won the league. He got fired at Olympiacos. He's been fired at Fenerbahce in Turkey. He got relegated with 1860 Munich, and he spent some time in China. It's a very mixed bag of a CV. The Everton fans did not want him at all, and the backlash was so strong that the club's owner apparently sort of changed direction and instead went with Super Frankie Lampard, who is now set to take over.
Okay, but explain this to me, because am I wrong in saying that it's not like people have been banging on Frank's door to come coach their team?
So there isn't. This is bad radio content, but someone made an amazing sort of Venn diagram on the internet, on the social media, of in one circle you have clubs who are too good to hire Frank Lampard. And then you have a second circle, then clubs that are too sensible to hire Frank Lampard. And then you have a third circle that are clubs that Frank Lampard thinks he's too good for. And there are just very few clubs that are completely outside of those circles. And this was made a few weeks back. And the two clubs that were not in any of those circles in the Premier League, in all of the Premier League, was Newcastle and Everton. And this proved to be pretty, you know, pretty clairvoyant, because here they go. Everton it is.
Yeah, like he's got no shot there, right? Like this is one of those deals where we all know going into it, in, you know, 8 to 14 months time, they're going to be looking for a new manager.
Probably, but what I would say, as someone who has no particular affection for Frank Lampard, in his defense, and I'm going to defend him before he's even taken over, I don't think anyone has a shot at Everton. I, with apologies to Sam Hale, but I don't think. I just think Everton are stuck in the situation where they aspire to compete for a Champions League spot and get involved with the top, but they're so far behind financially that doing it is just incredibly difficult. But they're also too good to, in a normal season, get relegated, though they seem to be doing their best this year.
So
they are this sort of, yeah, the mid-table doldrums. I don't see a world in which Everton get out of it. I don't see how they do that.
So if that's the case, wouldn't they have been better off just keeping Ferguson in as the interim caretaker for now?
Well, here, let me throw this in on top of it, which is, I know they're not a nation state, but it's, they've got a guy, an owner, who clearly wants to spend money and has. Like, what I can't figure out is why they haven't been doing better, considering they had a significant upgrade in ownership when this dude took over several years ago.
Okay, so he's the anti-Mike Ashley is what he is. He's an owner who's more than happy to plow money into the club, so they don't have that problem that the Newcastle guys had. But the problem is he spent it incompetently, very, very incompetently. And it's left them, because the money is coming from him and not from the club's, you know, actual income. It's left them in huge financial fair play problems. And this is something Rafa Benitez said in his statement when he was fired, is that he referenced the financial problems, because, you know, last summer they brought in Andros Townsend and Damari Gray for like a combined £1.5 million or something weird. I mean, they weren't allowed to spend anything. They have an owner who would like to spend, but they're not allowed because they've spent way too much and not made enough money. Is basically what's happened here. So that is a strange situation.
I would have waited till the end of this season. They would have stayed it up. Ferguson could have taken care of it the rest of the way. And then after the season, I think there would have been managers available, because it's the end of seasons around the world for them to choose from.
I just think that all the broadcasters should have given them money to keep Duncan as the manager, because there is so much entertainment value in watching him with his wristband and his facial... Yes, all of the things. I mean, he loves that club so much, and he so clearly wants that job to work out in his favor and him to do well in it.
And he's popular, right? I mean, the fan base likes him, correct?
They love him.
Yeah.
He is, but, I mean, I suspect, so what they say about Everton, the people who cover the club and are very well connected around that club, is that the owner, Farhad Moshiri, is quite personally involved. Like, the degree of involvement from the ownership, of course, varies from club to club. Farhad Moshiri likes to get involved with transfers, he likes to get involved with managerial appointments, and... maybe he just hires people he's impressed by, you know, people who, famous people that he like.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas football fans have some in common with him.
I wonder if he knows Sir Jerry Jones. Yeah. He's been riding around on the... All right.
Yeah,
so,
go
ahead.
Well, just lastly on Frank Lampard, I mean, he's someone who obviously had a great career at Chelsea, but he's someone who's been renowned for being sort of slightly smarter than your average footballer and speaks very well. He does come across well in interviews. We have seen with him as a manager is that he comes across significantly less well when he's under pressure. Then he seems to like be quite quick to blame other things and other people and this sort of thing. He's not that keen on taking responsibility for stuff. But when things are going well, he comes across very well. And he's someone who's, I mean, he's reportedly like friends with David Cameron, apparently. And he's like, I think if there's one manager out there who speak, you know, can come across well in an interview and speaks well when in contact with a very wealthy club owner, I suspect Frank Lampard has a gift for saying the right things in that sort of setting.
Well, it's entertaining.
I think that might be part of the reason.
Yeah, it's entertaining for the rest of us.
No,
all right, yes, Samid, I'm sorry. I know it's not entertaining to you, and I feel bad for you, but it is good for a chuckle. Okay, we're going to take a break. Lars, sit tight for a second. When we come back, we'll ask you about the race for fourth place here next on the Kick Around.
Yes.
Don't look now, but things are looking up in Frisco for Football Club Dallas. What in the world is going on? Buzz Carrick from ThirdDegree.net joins us here in a little bit. But back to the interwebs, where we dial up London and check in again with our good friend Lars Siverston. Lars, thank you for the fine Venn diagram that we have now tweeted out at the Kick Around. I love the Venn diagram. That is fantastic content. Thank you, sir.
It made me laugh, and I love the fact that whoever made it several weeks ago, like way before Frank Lampard was in the frame for the Everton job.
Nailed it. So
it's nailed it.
Absolutely nailed it.
All right, so let's quickly discuss the race for fourth place, because this really is where, other than relegation, this is where we're going to end up focusing the bulk of our coverage over the next several months. Do you have any really clear indicator in your head as to how this is going to finish out?
Not really. I was checking with the sort of the betting odds today before the show, and basically the betting market figures that Tottenham and United have got are neck and neck here, with Arsenal slightly further out and West Ham significantly further out. That's the idea. Tottenham and United are favourites, but completely nothing between them, and then Arsenal slightly less likely, and West Ham not likely at all.
So West Ham was looking really good, but now has fumbled two games in a row, the loss to Leeds and then losing to Manchester United in their last league game. For all of the good things that have been going on for the Hammers unexpectedly, at least by and large, is there any chances that they bring in a new player in before the window closes and kind of help solidify their roster to make a push for that fourth place spot?
It's possible, though it's hard to trust West Ham in the transfer market, because they have a very mixed history when they do dip into the market. They do have an extraordinary ability to just get it wrong, and they've spent a deceptively large amount of money in the last few years, so going back like 5-10 years. But dealing with the squad as it is right now, like I don't want to write them off. They've had a very good season, and it's good on David Moyes. He's doing a good job. The players are doing really well. Declan Rice is fantastic. All of this stuff, but the squad is just too thin. And you know, for them to make fourth, you basically need your first 11 to stay fit and to play near the top of their level for every game for the rest of the season. And that this just doesn't happen in football. You do get injuries. You do get loss of form or whatever. So that's why I think, not to rule West Ham out entirely, if they could sort of magically keep everyone healthy, then they have a chance. But if we're talking balance of probability, I'd have to say they're the least likely of the runners here.
Are you surprised Arsenal is significantly behind United and Tottenham in the betting market? To me, Arsenal, I think, you know, and they have a game in hand with United as well. They are not in a bad spot right now.
So the little sort of inside secret, I guess, the people who run the betting companies and look at odds, they look a lot at expected goals models to adjust the prices and stuff, and Arsenal's numbers are not that great. I say that United's numbers are not great either, but Arsenal have sort of had a season where they get the job done against the teams you'd expect them to beat, but they're never that convincing in my opinion, and I would be a little bit surprised. And they have this issue with their strikers, you know, with Aubameyang, who is completely frozen out now, with Lacazette and Nketiah, whose contracts both expire. I mean, that's not an ideal situation either. And again, there is a depth issue. We're seeing this now when they have some guys at the AFCON, or when they've had some guys at the AFCON. You know, suddenly they had to call off a game or have a game postponed, not because of COVID, really, just because they didn't have players.
All right, so then I go next to the table, which is Spurs, and Andy and I talked about this last week, which is you would think offhand that having all of these games in hand, they've got as many as, you know, two or three or four games in hand on other teams, depending on who you're comparing them to. You would normally think in a normal season that would be a good thing, but with the compression of all of the games, on top of the fact that they keep getting runoff from transfer deals. I'm thinking of the Luis Diaz deal that they, you know, that now that guy's going to Liverpool, and Adama Traore is now going to Barcelona. All of these guys that they tried to buy, they've not been able to get their hands on. Is the fact that they've got all these games actually almost like a negative in some ways?
It is a very good point. Annoyingly, it was the thing I was going to bring up when we were talking about Tottenham, but you got there before me.
Sorry.
You're right. Normally, you look at games in hand and you think, oh, this is great. You know, the points you can get. But no, you're going to have a problem with a lot of these games coming on top of each other. You're completely right. This is going to be a challenge. The reason I think Tottenham are so highly fancied by the bookmakers, and why I kind of like them for it myself, to be perfectly honest, which is that for all of their flaws and problems, I feel like you are really seeing a sort of Antonio Conte effect. I feel like you're seeing them gradually morph into an Antonio Conte team. We're starting to see some of the sort of the counter-attacking, the quick transition that he wants. They've gotten a little bit more solid defensively after he took over. They seem to be, you know, they're well on their way to becoming Contified, which if you compare to Man United, and we're going to get to that, I feel like they're much, you know, Man United have better players than Tottenham. Let's get it right here. Their max potential is much higher. But I feel like Tottenham are closer to becoming what their manager wants them to become than Manchester United are at this point in time.
Okay, but do we have any sense that Conte's even going to stick? Because if they can't buy the players that Conte wants for whatever reason, they keep getting outbid on players, or because they may not play in Champions League, players go. Like, isn't that a whole part of this Spurs problem?
It can be, but he's not going to leave now. I mean, it might be an issue in the summer, but I think right now, you know, for him, for him financially, leaving would be a bizarre decision because he's on a huge contract. So if he's unhappy, then he should just kind of sulk around and wait for them to fire him. You know, it's one of those. But at the other hand, you know, he's gone to Tottenham. Everyone in the world knows what kind of challenge he's taken on. And in leaving after one transfer window because he didn't get the players he wanted, it was like, that doesn't look good for him. Because everyone would have known he was going to have this problem. And he fancies himself as one of the top coaches in the world. And, you know, with Tottenham, even if he doesn't get the players he wants, here's a chance to prove it.
All right, you mentioned Manchester United. Yes, it's my team. One of the weird things that's been going on over the last week or so are these weird stories about their reluctance to sell players. Jesse Lingard, Donny van de Beek. And what is going on there? Because it seems like these are guys that two managers now have largely nothing or interest in using. Why wouldn't they sell them on and give them other opportunities?
Well, with Lingard, what they're doing, I think, is actually quite funny because Newcastle would very much like to bring him in on loan for the rest of the season. And what Manchester United proposed was, yes, sure, but we want a massive bonus fee from you if you don't get relegated. it was talk of as much as £12 million or something crazy like that for loaning him for 6 months, which I think I applaud this. I think if Newcastle is coming in for your players right now, you should absolutely gouge them. Quote an absolutely silly price. Why shouldn't you? You know, they have all the money in the world, or at least so they've been briefing journalists. So, you know, well, we'll see how that works out. There has been an issue with United going back a few years with not wanting to let people go and having evaluation internally of players that's perhaps not matched by the market, but they have managed to find someone for Anthony Martial to go, which is good. Listen, I guess if we're looking for positives, we know how much quality there is in the squad. They have gotten slightly better defensively under Rangnick. And while they've been very inconsistent, I mean, there have been some glimpses. I mean, we were chatting together recently. I think it was the second goal against Aston Villa. I mean, they ended up conceding two and drawing that game. But the second goal against Aston Villa got me slightly excited because that's exactly what Ralf Rangnick wants. You know, they won the ball high up the field and attacked very quickly with players. You know, there was a hint of Rangnick ball there. And the thing that worries me a bit is that you are getting these sort of drip of negative press stories. I mean, the most recent one was anonymous sources claimed that there are players who are unhappy with having to do homework at Man United. Ralf Rangnick and his coaches has been preparing video homework for them. Get video clips they have to watch that shows their performances and shows what they could do differently. And there are apparently players in the United squad who feel like this is impacting their spare their you know, leisure time, and they're not happy.
Mom, which is our one of those coach likes. Is so mean to us. He
so,
makes us do
Ronaldo, well. Pull up a chair. Let me show you the cemetery where you should be pressing more.
but it apparently referenced back to, I mean, Louis van Gaal, when he was there, would send like really long emails detailing everything the players had done wrong, and they would just delete them immediately when they came in. But you are getting, I mean, it's there's no sense that there's a player rebellion or anything, but you're getting this sort of steady trickle of anonymous sources-based stories of people at United being unhappy with what Ralph Rangnick wants them to do. Now, I guess that was always going to happen when an outsider comes in and tells them to work a lot harder than they're used to, and especially when that outsider is like a German nerd who's not very famous, at least to them. But I do worry that this schism between what Ralph Rangnick wants the players to do and what the players want to do might be a little bit big.
Lars, before we wrap up, real quick, Christian Eriksen, rumors came out, not rumors, but it came out this week that he's headed for Brentford. Is this something that he should be doing in light of what happened to him at the Euros?
Well, that's not for me to say, really, because I'm not a medical professional, so I can't say anything worth listening to about the medical implications of it. I can only assume that if it happens, it'll happen because he's been cleared by a bunch of doctors who know a lot more about this than I do. Brentford, I would like to mention, though, because it's an interesting choice of place for him to go. Brentford, of course, are owned by Matthew Benham, who also owns a club in Denmark, and they have a lot of Danish players. They have a Danish coach. They have something like, well, I'm just... This is me counting live on air. It's terrible radio. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm counting 6, 7 Danish players in the squad already. So like, it's a very sort of natural place for him to go, I suppose, in a weird way. And on a short-term deal, just to see if it works, you know, why not?
Man, that is a level of quality that could really make that team interesting above and beyond what they've already had, an interesting mid-table, kind of, right? You know, there introduction into the Premier League. That's... Mm-hmm. He's a game changer, right? That's like next level stuff. If in fact he's healthy enough to keep to return to form.
Yeah, I think possibly so, and I think he's good at something Brentford maybe lack. I mean, they're very energetic, they're quite well organized, but they lack a bit of cutting edge going forward. You know, if you look at their forward, Ivan Toney looks really good, but he has only scored 6 in 21, which isn't ideal for your top scorer. And the next guy down the line on their top scorer chart is Brian Mbeumo with 3 in 20 starts. So scoring goals has been an issue, and they're just a little bit of precision in attack, which both in terms of the final pass and in terms of finishing, I think Christian Eriksen could give them. So if he can do it physically, which is a big question, obviously it's the health issue, but he's also not played football for a while, so we don't really know. But if he's up to it physically, he could be a huge addition for them.
That there is the awesome Lars Sivertsen live from London. Lars, it's great to speak to you again. Glad you're healthy once more, and we look forward to speaking to you again in the future, our friend.
Anytime, sir. Fun to be on, as always.
Yes, you can follow Lars over on the Twitter because I can't spell his Norwegian last name. Just look for the funny Venn diagram we tweeted out a little while ago. His Twitter handle is found there. All right, when we come back, we're going to get our other friend, Buzz, on the phone to explain what in the F is going on at FC Dallas. Andy, I think you will agree. It's nice to be back in the seat doing a full-on 2-hour kick around.
It's been a while. 2 hours plus, buddy.
Yeah, look at us.
We're bringing it today.
Yeah. Go ahead and retire Tom Brady.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. Whoever.
22-year NFL career.
Sniff. All right. Now on the Buyer's Barricade. No, wait. Oh, I said it wrong. It's even written here by the phone.
Well, technically it's not.
Oh, he's not even on the phone, is
he?
No. So good. All right. On the good old internet. Our good friend, live from somewhere in Arlington, Texas. You know him. I love him. Everybody loves him. He's your hero. Editor, founder of ThirdDegree.net and knower of all things Football Club Dallas. It is Buzz Carrick. Hello, Buzzard.
Hi, Peter. I am indeed a little weirded out to be on the internet today. This is a first to join you guys this way.
It sounds so much better once we get your gain and levels set properly. There we go. All right.
Yeah, real radio, right?
Yeah, very good. Buzz, okay, let's just set the table here for, I'm not even going to go back to 1996 at the origins of the Dallas Burn. Let's just pick up in 2003 when the Hunts took over and renamed it as FC Dallas. We now have been running on almost, I don't know, near 20 years of complaining about lack of spending, the plan, what you doing. Because things have changed dramatically in the last few weeks, Buzz. What the F is going on at FC Dallas?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, the Hunts have caught a lot of grief over the years from various people in the space of soccer for their failure to I don't know what you would call it, compete at the deeper end of the pool to spend money on players. They've always, you know, done their money other ways. And they've long said that they needed to bring money in before it goes out. So we're going to take them at their word that now that has finally happened, that they're selling these players for relatively large amounts of money and bringing in these relatively large amounts of money, that they are actually doing what they said they were going to do and turning around and using that money to acquire players. It's really exciting. It's very different than what we've seen before. It's not just in the players. There's actually things happening all across the club that involve more spends of money on things other than infrastructure, which is
marketing. They've
always been reluctant to do. Marketing is one of the big ones. There's renewed emphasis on interaction with the supporters groups and assisting them rather than being a detriment to them. So there's all kinds of things changing in this one particular offseason, and it's fascinating to watch, and it's exciting if you like this club.
All right, so let's talk about the one official move they had made, a record-setting move for the club in terms of transfer deal within the league, a trade that involved money, and that's the signing or the trade for Paul Arriola, national team player. Tell us a little bit about that move.
Well, that's a relationship with the new coach, Nico Estevez, who obviously comes from the national team. And I talked about that relationship with the coach this week, and he said that's a big part of it. You know, his knowledge of the player and knowing exactly what he's getting. It's also a case that Paul Arriola is focused on making the World Cup team, as lots of people that are in the pool are at this current time. And that the way that the Dallas will play under this coach was appealing to Paul himself. So it's a deal that made a lot of sense for both parties. Again, this is another deal, even though it's, if you want to call it this, funny money or fake money, in the sense that it's money inside the umbrella of Major League Soccer, you still have to earn it by various mechanisms. And one of the big ones is, of course, comes from the selling of players. So you get to keep big chunks of it in terms of this kind of funny money. So Dallas had more than anyone else, and they're using it as a hammer, if you will, to smash other teams over the head and take away some players.
And so this was $2 million,
right? Exciting time.
$2 million, Buzz?
It was $2 million, and there's some incentives that it could actually go up to, I think, 2.3. That's what's been reported by other people, not myself, but that's a fair amount. That's a pretty big jump up from the previous record. In a case of this player, you're talking about a known commodity in the prime of his career. You know exactly what you're getting. You know, and a guy that can perform consistently in Major League Soccer. You know, like anyone else, he's been injured a time or two, but for the most part, he's a grinder and a guy that's capable of playing at this level or in Liga MX, which is also a very high level, and he's consistently called into the national team. So the domestic status is important in this league when so much of the talent is foreign. So you have a player that can compete at the highest level that is domestic. It's really nice to have that player on your roster.
And then on the other hand, because these are two things that are happening in parallel with each other, which is really what is amplified the curiosity of what has happened within the front office at FC Dallas, is the pending arrival of Alan Velasco, who is a noted 19-year-old Argentinian winger from the other side. So Paul Arriola plays on the right, Velasco plays on the left. He is by and large considered to be one of the top five 19-year-old Argentinian attackers in that country. He's coming from Independiente for a record, Buzz, like $7.5 million transfer real time dollars.
Real buckaroos.
And there's also incentives with that deal that it could jump up to more to like $9 million. And this club's previous outlay was in the neighborhood of $3 to $3.5 million as a record. And even then, if you pass that, there's only been one or two players over $1 million. Most of them have been between, and there's not been that many buys, frankly. It's less than 20 probably in their history. And most of them come around the $500,000 to $800,000 level. So again, this is a paradigm change in the amount of money they're spending. This is a player who, just so your audience might know, stylistically, he plays a little bit like Pulisic, Christian Pulisic. He wants to come back a little bit and pick up a ball and then go at people. That's the kind of player you're getting. Obviously, he's considerably younger than Christian at this time. But, you know, he's an impact player that people are really excited about if it actually happens. Of course, it's not across the line yet. But all the reports are the deal is done and the physical, the medical checkup is happening. So it's just a matter of time, I believe, before this is finally announced.
So in the weeks ahead, we'll talk about, you know, these acquisitions once the Velasco acquisition is official, how this might impact the team in the standings and how much better we expect them to be this year compared to where they were last year. But in terms of style of play, and this is kind of, you know, we're kind of seeing two acquisitions now, two wingers, and now Jesus is playing as the nine with the national team. Pepe's gone. Jara's a year older. Are we now kind of seeing what Nico is going to do in terms of style and tactics, and what we're going to see from Ferreira as well? As is he the true nine? Is he going to play as a nine? Are we looking at a 4-3-3? What is this indicating now that if Velasco is in fact going to come?
Yeah, coach has been asked flat out, you know, is Jesus a nine? And his answer was yes. And that was it. There was no equivocation. There was no beating around the bush. In this system for FC Dallas, Jesus is your nine, and Frank O'Hara will be predominantly a bench player or a starter if Jesus is gone. All signs from Nico's previous stops are a 4-3-3, essentially exactly the kind of 4-3-3 that the U.S. national team plays under Greg Berhalter, which is where he was just an assistant. All the signs from training are, yes, 4-3-3 system. That includes Paxton Pomykal playing back inside as an eight, which I know you guys will like. Mm-hmm. So if you want to watch the way the U.S. plays with Jesus as a nine, that's pretty much exactly how, with minor tweaks depending on personnel, mm-hmm. of course, because everyone's slightly different. But that's basically the exact system you'll see FC Dallas employ most of the time, is that false nine. We call it just sort of as a signifier of Jesus' style in that nine position where he's going to move out and create space.
All right. Am I being a bummer for bringing up the fact that the only teams in the world that are really good at playing with a false nine are the really best club teams in the world?
No, I think that's pretty fair. You know, you can, there are plenty of examples of teams that do that. You know, everything, of course, is relative to the league. Certainly Jesus's profile is exactly the kind of profile for a nine, if you want to use him there, to fit this system. And obviously, one of the things that the technical director, Andres Zanata, said when they were first hiring Coach Estevez, was that the player acquisitions are going to be about the style of play, to play the way the coach wants. So they immediately went out and got, it appears, two wingers that are going to play the way that you need to run this false nine style 4-3-3.
Yeah, and I think I'm sorry, Buzz, go ahead.
No, I was basically wrapping up the statement to say that while it is true that only the very best in the world pull this off at a really high level, if you have the proper talent relative to your league, you can get it done. And again, they've reinforced the idea that what you see today is not the final product. There's going to be more steps down this pathway over the next season or two as they try and build this thing.
Yeah, and I think how you define false nine too varies.
Sure.
I don't know if this is a full false nine that we're seeing Jesus play with the national team, and what apparently, you know, he's going to be doing with the FC Dallas club. Right, I don't think it's like, it's not the messy false nine that we were seeing with Barcelona. And
there's so much to be determined. I mean, look, the new coach has a relatively short resume in terms of being a manager. He's never managed him. He's never mm-hmm. been the manager in Major League Soccer. His time in playing in that role is very limited. So there's a lot to learn about what he wants to do and his capabilities mm-hmm. of doing it. But there is lots of reasons to feel good about the club at the beginning of a season, unlike pretty much any other season I can remember, just because of all these things. And then in addition to that, Buzz, they just traded a bunch of the fake money again with Seattle for another international slot. I'm assuming that's going to be another center midfielder to back up the kids that they're planning on using.
I would think so. You know, they already had enough international slots to add Velasco. So to go get another one is telling that they're obviously after something. If you look at the depth chart, there's a hole in the center of the midfield, because as much as we like Paxton and Brandon Cervenia, that's only two guys. You need depth there. The other pieces that are there are really young and unproven, and you cannot count on them at this point. So even if it's just a legitimate player sort of in a depth idea, you need bodies in there for sure, and you might even want a guy who's more older than 22, as both those guys really are still young players. You might look for a sort of a veteran kind of presence in there. The other possibility, I suppose, is center back, because the defense has not been great, and that is a position you spend money. But you know, with Matt Hedges returning to health, Nkosi Tafari's progression, and hopefully Martinez also being healthy, you might be all right there. So those are the two most likely, but I agree it'll be center midfield.
All right. This is the amazing Buzz Carrick, founder of ThirdDegree.net, who, by the way, is entering his 25th season of covering all things Football Club Dallas. He is the definitive independent resource on it. Buzz, let me give you an opportunity to promote your Patreon and where people can find your work.
Yeah, the website's thirddegree.net. We have a podcast that's basically named the same thing. The Patreon is, if you go to this Patreon and look for Third Degree, it's under that same tag. And it's a chance for people that like our work. We don't have a paywall. It's just if you like what we do and want to support us, and people that do support us get a little bit of extra insider type information. But for the most part, I call it the PBS method, where if you like what we do, we'd love to have you support us.
Thanks, Buzz. It's great speaking to you again and looking forward to the new season, obviously.
Yeah, anytime it's exciting to be to see this change in the team. Hopefully it'll be successful, but even if it's not right away, at least it gives us plenty to talk about because the times are definitely different.
All right.
Thanks, Buzz. All right, Buzz Eric from ThirdDegree.net. When we come back, we'll flip over and talk to our buddy Tyler about all things Bundesliga next here on the Kick Around. Hawkadocky, man, we are plowing through some soccer talking today, my friend Andy. Look at us go. Mm-hmm. All right, now we'll return back to the internet and make the illusion that it sounds like he's right here in the studio with us, but he's actually at home. It is Tyler Kern live on the Kick Around. Hello, Tyler.
Hello, hello, boys. How do I sound? Do I
sound okay? You sound like you're right here next to us.
Right, you're like, man, it's like a Tyler Kern sandwich. You're the meat. You don't get it?
You caught him off guard there, Peter. Peter, before we start asking Tyler all kinds of Bundesliga questions, I do have a Bundesliga league table standings question for you, Tyler. Mm-hmm. Who is in first place in the Bundesliga, Tyler, this week?
Bayern Munich is okay. In first place. Okay. Once again, Andy.
Let me jot that down again. Okay.
He forgets sometimes because okay. It changes okay. So often. Yeah. He can't quite keep up, Tyler. Okay. I don't know.
Wait, how many points are Manchester City ahead of Liverpool?
Okay,
in
so do I have to go
the Premier League standings?
Do I have to go over this with you as well? Liverpool has a game in hand. That's 3 points. They play Man City. That's another 3 points if they beat them. That's a 6-point makeup, and then they're only 3 points back. Liverpool has a legit chance to win the title. Why can anybody not understand this?
Just pat him on his head, Tyler, and tell him, okay, Andy, whatever you say.
Yeah, I mean, like we talk every week about how uncompetitive the Bundesliga is, yet I look at the table and it's a 6-point gap, and then I go over to the Premier League and what's that? It's a 9-point gap.
So if you want to go there, I will give you my 20-second rebuttal. A, there are five or six teams, four teams that can win the EPL any given year. There's one in the Bundesliga, and Bayern has won like the last 20 straight or something, right? I know Dortmund won a couple here and there.
So basically, if you're not a fan of Manchester City, Liverpool, or Chelsea, then like the Premier League's the exact same as the Bundesliga, I guess, right? This is just where we are. You just promised us.
Andy, why are you upsetting our guest? He's doing us a favor to talk about a league that you and I don't watch enough to.
Because I want Augsburg, one of my new favorite teams in the Bundesliga, to have a chance.
We have to talk about this, Tyler, because if there's something to talk about, we really need your help.
Yes.
Because I'm very, very worried about Ricardo Pepi's time in the Bundesliga, because I've now watched 3 Augsburg games in a row, and boy howdy, that is not a good soccer
team.
Tyler,
they're bad, Tyler.
Look, the concern about Augsburg, and everyone kind of knew this as Ricardo Pepi joined, they looked at the table and said, man, that team doesn't score a lot of goals. But it's not just that. It's deeper than that. It's not just that they don't score a lot of goals. It's that they don't really even create chances, right? And that's a big problem. Like, if you look at every statistical sort of metric you could look at, Augsburg are 15th in big chances created, 16th in shots on target per match, and 15th in team expected goals for in a league that only has 18 teams, right? So they're bottom three in just about every major statistical category when it comes to chance creation. So it's not like they just needed a guy to come in and finish off all these great opportunities that their offense is creating. They're not creating opportunities in the first place. Now, maybe a focal point for their offense can help, but it's not going to make them a good team, and it's not going to make them exciting to watch.
So Thursday, when the U.S. played El Salvador, I think some of us, were you surprised Pepi didn't start?
I was a little surprised, and I saw...
I was just
Andy, were you surprised?
I was for a split second, then I thought it made sense because of what Pepe's been going through, and for
he's on 700 plus minutes of not scoring for club or country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Berhalter kind of had some quotes after the game where they asked about Pepe and that sort of thing. He's like, look, I sat down with Ricardo, we talked about it, and I told him, like, look, there's a lot of things happening for you. You just moved to Germany, you know, you're figuring yourself out with this new team and all of these sorts of things. So there's a lot of transitions going on for Ricardo Pepe. Just like he's still a young player. There's still plenty of time for him to find his footing and, you know, that sort of thing. He didn't finish off the MLS regular season all that well with FC Dallas. So it's, like you said, Peter, it's been a while since he scored. Just, I think patience is necessary, but again, it's not going to be an easy ride with this.
Oh, okay, so as a follow-up to that, because you're right, patience is important, but, you know, this is a player we care a lot about because he's one of our own, right? So we're watching him closely and hoping for success. But patience, you know, how much patience will they have there? The fan base, the coaching staff. And then one thing that I've noticed, I don't know if you've been able to see some of his games, Peter, this is also directed at you, and maybe I'm being hypersensitive and being overprotective of the player, but I see his teammates with the ball, and he's making runs, and they see his run, and they opt, it's like a decision in their head to not go to him, they look the other way and go to somebody else. Am I seeing things, or am I being hypersensitive?
No, I've noticed that, but I think that maybe it's been a while since that team has had that guy making those runs, right? And that's probably why they don't score a lot of goals. Right.
Like, what do I do with this amazing run?
Right? Yeah, that's like that's the best way I can interpret it. I don't think he's been there long enough for all of his teammates to hate him, unless they just hate how much money the team spent.
Well, you know,
on him.
That's kind of a follow up question. Or is there a sensitivity to that? I mean, here comes this, you know, 19, 18 year old kid with a $20 million transfer fee, and they're like, what's wrong with us? You know, obviously we know what's wrong with you guys. You guys aren't very good. But, you know, is there a little bit of jealousy? And is that factoring in? I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it's too early.
Well, I just wonder if while we're all worried about this, if in many ways maybe it would be good for Ricardo to go through a season. I mean, that's
okay,
a kid
here's
that's...
dad, Peter.
Well, no. Well, look, he's every team, no matter from academy all the way up to Major League Soccer and then even the national team, he's always had amazing starts. He most of the time he scores on his debut. Now he's in a situation that's completely different, ocean water, and maybe in some ways it will be good for an 18-year-old kid that's had this kind of rocket of stardom to kind of just like level set him. And you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense, Tyler, at all?
I totally know what you mean. That's kind of what I was thinking as well, is that the next period of extended trouble or struggle for him will probably be the first in his career, right? In terms of like significant hurdle to overcome. And this is a big step up in terms of competition. You're playing with the team that does not create a lot of chances and that sort of thing, like we've talked about. So this is an obstacle to overcome for him. And in a lot of ways, I think you're right. I think this is good. I think the team is so significantly invested in him that they have to have patience. And I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. And we used to talk about this with Josh Sargent all the time with Werder Bremen. Would it be a bad thing if they got relegated and then he got to score 20 goals and play 90 minutes on a week-in, week-out basis in the second division before then getting promoted and that kind of be a nice easing into life in Europe kind of situation? And I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if Augsburg were to be relegated.
Well, they look pretty bad to me, so I won't be surprised if they end up getting relegated, although the Bundesliga has a little bit different way of deciding that.
Right, and let's explain it. It's the bottom two that go down.
Automatically.
Yeah, automatically. Yeah. 16th place, which is the third from last, or second from last, whatever, they go into a playoff against the third place from the second division, right? And so there's
that
a
is
little
correct.
Bit, yeah. So we're hoping at least they get... You know, they don't drop to the bottom two and they get in that playoff.
All right. Now, Tyler, we don't have much time, but I do want to ask you if you could provide some clarification on what in the world is going on with Erling Haaland and Dortmund, because you would think for a guy that has scored so many goals in so few games for a club that they would have a much better relationship. But at least based on the headlines and the tweets and stuff I've seen in the last week or so, that feels like that's getting squirrely very fast.
Yeah, Dortmund was pushing to get Haaland to kind of elaborate, I think, a little bit on his plans for the future. Like, are you leaving this summer? What do you want to do? And kind of pushing to get that decision made, because especially in Germany, more so than some of the other leagues around the world, they really like to get their transfer business done early. So I think Dortmund doesn't want to be unprepared this summer if Haaland decides, yeah, a team triggered my release clause and I want out, I want to go. And so they were trying to push for that decision now. Haaland is kind of the I'm all business, I just want to play football, I just want to go out there and score goals kind of guy, and seemed to get pretty annoyed by that. And I think there's a little bit of annoyance there on both sides, between team and player. I think it's pretty dang likely he leaves in the summertime. I think the list of teams that are going to line up to pay that release clause, which I think is about $85 million US. I think it's 67 million euros, something like that. I think there's going to be a pretty significant list of teams like Real Madrid, Manchester City, that are going to line up to try to bid for his services. So I think he's gone in the summertime regardless. A lot of people are saying Manchester City are the favorites in the Premier League. I think he ends up at Real Madrid. That's just always kind of been what I think. But I think Real Madrid's spring for Mbappe and Erling Haaland this summer and come back looking like the Galacticos that we all kind of know.
Could you imagine a football team with Mbappe and Haaland on it at the same time? That seems completely unfair in every way, shape, and form.
Well, that team on the counterattack would just be devastating, just horrifying. I don't see necessarily how he fits into a Manchester City system, because he likes to use that pace that he has to run him behind a little bit more, and Manchester City's system just doesn't seem to work out quite as well. But his dad was a captain there at City. Yeah. City's a terrible team to watch anyways. But yeah, so I think there might be an emotional tie there, but to me, I think I think Real Madrid's the better fit.
Especially with that midfield. Casemiro and Modric and the other third guy signed. I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Toni Kroos.
Yeah, Kroos. Yeah, that would be... If those three are still there when those two show up, it would be mind-bendingly good. Tyler, anything else Bundesliga-wise we need to touch on before we kick you out of here?
Keep an eye. Kevin Paredes just signed $7 million from DC United here in the United States over to Wolfsburg, joining John Brooks there at Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg's a bit of a dumpster fire right now, but Paredes is an exciting player to watch. Also, FC Dallas, Justin Shea, center back / right back, on loan to Hoffenheim for 18 months and joining Chris Richards there. So, lots of Americans to keep an eye on in the Bundesliga.
You got to keep doing your homework.
I'm not happy about the Justin Shea thing, Tyler.
Peter wanted him to stay with FC Dallas.
If he can get time in the Bundesliga, why isn't he starting for FC Dallas in Major League Soccer? That's my question.
And another show for another day.
You guys just talked to Buzz, and I think a big thing about what FC Dallas has just done is hopefully change the culture a little bit more, where it's more exciting to play for FC Dallas rather than just come through the academy at FC Dallas on your way overseas, right?
Wow. Great point.
I think that's a big deal.
Drop your mic, Tyler. Excellent stuff. Excellent. Tyler Kern, you're my friend. You have nothing to promote, do you?
No. I have a buddy that has a soccer jersey website you should check out. LondonCallingTX.com. Okay. Go check out Tom. Good stuff.
Okay.
Go buy a good soccer jersey. If you need if you need a good Bundesliga jersey.
Hey, US Canada prediction?
USA 2-1.
The great Tyler Kern. You can follow him over on Twitter like everybody else. Tyler, thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, when we come back, we will finish up the show with a good old-fashioned dribble next year on the Kicker. Well, here we are, Andy. We've made it to a final segment of another 2+ hour show of the Kick Around. And we felt a little unlucky to find out that the Tom Brady news had broken before we went live, thinking that was going to somehow interrupt us. But now I'm actually fascinated by this story as it continues to turn and spin in different directions. Nobody knows where it's going to go, but the idea that we're now going to spend the next kajillion days talking about this and speculating. Because we were just talking about this. Is he under contract with the Buccaneers?
Yes, he is. We've discovered this now. He signed a one-year extension last March.
So he can't now just sign a one-day deal with the Patriots and retire.
No, he can't.
Because he's with the Buccaneers.
They'd have to release him.
They would have to let him out of his deal.
Work out some sort of release, yeah.
Crazy. What in the world? Because the idea that Schechter and that other guy would actually report that he's retired, and find out later that he's not, like, as a journalist, that would be
that
would be a story
for,
unto itself.
Of his stature, that would be devastating.
Let's also remember that Tom Brady is a pretty petty individual at times, and he could be just throwing water on the fire just because.
Yeah, I suppose so. All right. Well, the ticket, of course, and all the good ticker people like Jacob will keep you up to date on it as best we can. There you go. All right. Now, Andy, before we finish off the show here, we've got a few things to do here.
Yeah.
One of the things we have not talked about is the African Cup of Nations, which has been going on for a while. And that is a really weird tournament because of the timing. And it's also one of these weird things where you feel like there's a ton of racism that gets thrown its way for a lot of different weird reasons.
Like racism towards it.
Yes.
Right.
For a lot of different reasons. But I will also, at the same time, say it feels like it's this tournament that just can't get out of its own way.
A little wheels off, as we would say here on the ticket. And let's just start to spout some of the things that have gone a little bit on the quirky side.
Well, this isn't quirky. This is tragic. Imagine the Gold Cup or the Copa America suffering the loss of human life because there is a stampede of people that end up trampling eight people to death outside the stadium.
Right, at the beginning, when they were going into the stadium for the Cameroon match.
So now, that's a terrible story.
They played the game. That's the like a secondary note to that. Like, imagine if this happened in CONCACAF or in South America, even Europe. Would they actually play the game if that happened?
No, they would have called the game off.
Right. So that's kind of...
So you don't know, is that a communication issue? Is that just people not caring? I don't know, and that's... It's a really awful mark on that tournament, because if you've had a chance to watch any of the games, and trying to watch them has been difficult because of the access here in the United States, the games have been kind of oddly entertaining in many ways.
Yeah, and at least the officiating has been great, right?
No, that's been a problem too, Andy. That's been an issue too. And then the other craziest, I think probably the craziest story outside of the trampling and death was the story of, well, first off, there's all these countries playing in the tournament I've never even heard of before. Comoros?
Yeah, that's their first.
There's two other nations I had never even heard of. But Comoros ends up playing a game against Cameroon last week where, because of COVID, they had so many people test positive, which included all of their goalkeepers. Their right back had to play goalkeeper for them. And in the game, early in the game, one of their players gets a red card and ejected. So now they're playing Cameroon, the host nation, and a favorite to potentially win the entire tournament, down a man with their right back.
Yeah.
You know, the glory of a field player playing in goal is always one of the best things.
And they stayed in it.
They scored a really nice free kick to make it 1-1. The goal guy playing in goal really played out of his mind. It was really wheels off and very entertaining in its own way.
Comoros, by the way, is right off the coast of Madagascar. Population less than 1 million. First Nations Cup they're playing.
It's an archipelago, I think is the proper
archipelago, okay.
Is that what it's called? I don't know.
It looks like an island, but okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm still confused by is why the player that ended up playing in goal, so they were wearing white, so he chose to wear their blue other jersey, and his number is 16, but for reasons I don't yet understand, he had taped the number 3 on top of the 16.
The Moss Park secret. Just tape will fix a number. We all know this,
right? It was very, very Moss Park. So the African Cup of Nations continues on, and a lot of club teams and managers are all tight sphinctered, hoping that their star players, like Sadio Mane, clashing heads and getting a concussion.
That was not good.
And being allowed to continue to play. So keep your eye on
and
that.
And Salah scoring the game-winning PK for Egypt.
Now, I wanted to come back before we finish the show, Andy, because tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is when your native land, Canada, faces off against my native land, the United States of America.
In a battle for first, no less.
In a battle for first, no less, Andy.
Although if it's a draw, Canada maintains the hold on first place.
And you Canadians are so shady that you're going to make us play on a fake field surface.
But at least we're not taking you somewhere where it's going to be like minus 880 like you are Honduras on Wednesday. You know, it's going to be a comfortable 22 degrees or so.
Okay.
At 2 in the afternoon tomorrow.
One of those fields that's like 60 yards long and 20 yards wide?
No, it's a legit with Field, that stadium, particular stadium, creates a little bit of a wind tunnel. So it might get a little blustery in terms of wind. If there's any kind of wind in the surrounding areas, that stadium will create a little bit of a wind tunnel, and conditions might be a little colder than they seem to be just by the temperature. But I do think that the U.S. has a little bit of an advantage, that Davis is not playing. Canada had to travel a little bit more, like John Arnold said. And I think a draw, I think I would be happy with a draw.
Yeah, I would be happy with a draw, too. You know, these three-game windows are tough on everybody. The real storyline for me is, one, is Pepe going to start? And two, what happens with Christian Pulisic?
There's
all kinds of tactical discussion. If you want to read what I think is the most accurate summation of the issues with Pulisic, is go read Matt Doyle's review of the Thursday game over at MLSsoccer.com. Mm-hmm. It's the second part of his review where he actually goes into some pretty good detail, complete with videos and diagrams, about what is really causing problems with Pulisic. I mean, I think it's not unfair to say he was the worst player for the U.S.
Yeah, he wasn't good, but he's allowed to have bad games. Great players are. So my question for you, are you worried about Pulisic, like, you know, what's going to happen in the short term, Wednesday's game, tomorrow's game, next qualifying, or are you kind of worried about Pulisic long term here?
I'm worried more about Pulisic as a player in general. It's clear to me that is a kid. My read on the situation is he is a player returning, trying to find his form post-injury. The problem is he plays for a club team that is so good that they don't have the time to let him just play games to play through it. Mm-hmm. They're going to sit him like they have. So if he was playing at Crystal Palace, as an example, they would just let him keep playing, and eventually he'd play through it and find his form. He's not going to get that opportunity at Chelsea, and I think that is what we're seeing with the U.S., where he holds the ball too long, he doesn't pass fast enough, he tries to dribble through four guys.
You could say it's probably the most difficult stretch of his career presently, right? But all players kind of go through this. And keep in mind, take a step back and look at the U.S. national team and how young they are. And so we're going to have a hiccup here, a hiccup there, inconsistency is going to be part. But this is a team really developing nicely. And if you look at the end goal, yeah, it's to get to the 2022 World Cup and do something there. But the end goal with this squad is a deep run in the 2026 World Cup when it's hosted here in the U.S.
It's funny because we've talked a lot about there being the four-star players, which is Giovanni Reyna, Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, and Weston McKennie. Those four players have never played on the same field together for the U.S. Well, now I've added in Musa. Mm-hmm. Musa, who really is become a critical piece of what everybody calls the MMA midfield.
Looked very good.
That was only the fourth time those three guys. Now, it was the first time Thursday that Musa, McKennie, Adams, and Pulisic had played together. And so really getting an opportunity, because if you really want to enjoy watching this team, this is without question the best midfield the United States has ever. I mean, there is legitimate world-class talent between Musa, McKennie, and Adams for the U.S.
Yeah, and if you can even discard Reyna, not discard him, but move him aside and insert Musa, and now you're talking about the four, right? Like, you can make those the key four.
Well,
instead of Reyna,
I can imagine a future where it's Pulisic and Giovanni Reyna up front with Pepe,
and then
behind it. And now you've got not four, but five really amazing players.
The other thing that I want to bring up really quick with you, and kind of we have to do a 180 here, is Weston McKennie, because we were so high on him. And then we were so low on him after his little incident in one of those windows.
He's so good.
But he's bounced back. He's put that behind him. And he's really, I think, he's the MVP right now of this team.
Real quick, I want to acknowledge one Walker Zimmerman, who I believe might have now be on pace to be the most consistently good player over the course of these number of games he's played in a row.
Not flashy, but gets the job done.
Man, he's passing at a very high level. He's winning every ball in the air. I've really, really, really come to enjoy Weston in that. I mean, not Weston. Yeah, Zimmerman. Walker, yep. Zimmerman in that position. I think I think he's really solidified his spot on the World Cup.
I agree.
Assuming they made it
next to Robinson. And Ferreira, despite not scoring, did not look bad as the nine. We didn't really talk about that. He needs to put it away. He needs to put one of those opportunities away. But he didn't look bad.
Yeah, the missed finish really screwed up what was a very high performance from him for what he was asked to do. Yeah. All right, U.S. Canada tomorrow, Paramount Plus, 2 p.m. Should be a good one. The game against Honduras is on Wednesday. Wow, what a day. We finally got to do a full show, Andy. Thank you to Jacob for doing all heavy lifting during the tickers. Sam, you did great. And EA, man, I hope you're our new official board up full time, guys. All right, hopefully we'll be back again next week. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.